we're going to strike different chords than usual today, because that's what I feel my responsibility is to the audience, and clearly the right thing to do. Moreover, we're going to try and sprinkle in some fun throughout too, but there are three things I have no interest in hearing today. I'm just not in the mood for it. Three things I will have no patience for. Number one, stick to sports guy. It's a funny thing. I see him out there just edging along, hiding in the weeds, waiting at the earliest convenience to say, stick to sports. Sports guy, you work at Sports Hub Triad. Talk about sports. But that person is cornered in a very weird position, because to that guy, if you are that person who will tell a sports broadcaster, a reporter, somebody on television, etc., to stick to sports when talking about something, in this case, is it really that political, even though everything seems to be politicized nowadays? To you, I ask, what sports do you want me to talk about? NASCAR? Brad Keselowski getting a win yesterday? Remember, we used to carry NASCAR every single week on this station. We took it off the air 1 or 2 years ago, and Robert, guess how many complaints we got for taking NASCAR off the air? You would think biggest market per viewership.
Maybe a handful?
Yeah, maybe a handful. Not one. Not one person has formally complained about NASCAR not being on our radio station anymore. Not one person. Compare that to what I get on a weekly basis, maybe even a daily basis. Every other day, I get an email, I get a tweet, I get a direct message. Somebody saying, I suck. Hey, I should have someone else do my show. People say they can do their show or do my show better than I can, et cetera, et cetera. It's kind of an amazing thing that nobody says, hey, where's NASCAR, when we had it for many years. I tried to talk about Ace Speedway, what happened this weekend. Then folks in Burlington got mad at me. Hey, stop talking about that. Okay, can't. I stick to sports, and then I stick to sports, and you don't care about that much. Wake Forest, they landed a transfer, and Davian Williamson, we're going to have him on today's show, and I want to spend some time on the Deacons, and we'll do that in about 10 minutes. Bundesliga soccer, are we going to do that? We have Dino Staley. How about you talk about the major American sports, Josh? All they want to talk about, those sports, the NBA, NFL, all they want to talk about is George Floyd. And beg that people will listen. So, stick to sports guy is cornered today. I don't want to hear stick to sports. The second thing I don't want to hear today. Stop saying all lives matter. Please, I beg you. Anybody with a functioning brain knows all lives matter. We know that. But saying that expression, saying those three words, even if you don't realize it, putting them together the way you do there, it's a rebuke to Black Lives Matter. And for those who try to politicize Black Lives Matter, they never said they matter more. They're never saying they're the only ones that matter. They simply are saying we matter too. And this is the part that confuses me with this. People being upset when you talk about Black Lives Matter in comparison to All Lives Matter, all that nonsense. Do we do this with any more of our philanthropic causes? Do we do this with anything else? I'm genuinely asking out loud. When the NFL has its breast cancer month in October, are people saying, hey, what about prostate cancer? All cancers matter, NFL, not just breast cancer. When environmentalists say, recycle, think about the whales, think about the dolphins. When people say, save the whales, they're not saying, bleep you, dolphin. They're not saying, what about the sea lions?
Yeah, who cares about porpoises?
Right. I don't think we do this with any other cause except this one here. Somehow it's controversial just to say Black Lives Matter. You can tweet the show at Sports Hub Triad. I'm very hesitant about taking phone calls today. I'm willing to do it. 336-777-1600 is the phone number, but I'm just going to put up with no nonsense. I'm willing to hear introspection. I'm willing to hear perspective. I'm willing to hear stories about what transpired in the cities that we love this weekend. In Greensboro, in Winston-Salem, in Raleigh, in Charlotte. We all probably have connection to that in some way, and I'm willing to hear those stories today. I'm going to open up the platform a bit in a way that we usually don't. 336-777-1600 being the number on Twitter at SportsUpDryad. Just don't tell me to stick to sports. Stop saying all lives matter. We know. And lastly, this one's very personal to me. Stop saying these protesting groups are anti-police. Nobody is anti-police. Nobody. Some, you might try to construe it. You might try to muddy the waters. If you're against some of these political groups, you might think, oh, this, they're trying to get rid of police officers. They're negative police officers. My dad is a police officer. I have cousins who are police officers. I worry about these people who are working and how much more difficult their jobs are going to be as a result of a very few amounts actions, right? But we are smarter than this. We are smart enough to hold multiple ideas in our head at once. You can be pro-police and anti-police brutality. You can hold both those ideas at your head. You just can't. Because this is horrifying. Everybody agrees it's horrifying. Both sides of the aisle, they can recognize what happened to George Floyd cannot be acceptable in any way, shape, or form. Nobody is disagreeing with that. Nobody is anti-police. That's why we just spent the last few months, Robert. It's crazy. We spent the last few months before this past week celebrating who? First responders. Thanking them. We have radio commercials. It's all over television. First responders are the ones that we're thinking about. Police is included in that. And there's a reason. Most people appreciate the work that they do. Appreciate the ones who put an effort into having relationships with the communities they swear to protect. And we've seen those officers. We saw them in Atlanta. We saw them in Minnesota even. Ones who disagreed, disavowed people who worked at the same police station as they occupied. People who answered to the same people. We saw those actions disavowed. So they're a part of this healing process too. Let's not exclude them. So those are the three things I don't want to hear today. I just don't. I'm willing to hear a lot, and we'll open up those lines at 777-1600. Don't tell me to stick to sports. All lives matter. We know what you're really saying when you say that. And stop saying that these groups are anti-police. Nobody out there is really anti-police.
And just something to add on top of that, something that, I mean, I don't really care if you hear it today or I hear it, but I'd prefer not to. Just like you're talking about the police, that a few bad apples or whatever expression you want to use, you can't use that to hold against all police. You cannot hold these looters in the same breath as the protesters. That does not lessen anything that they're doing by their being looting.
I am worried that the message can be hijacked. I'm worried about that.
And that's our job to know that it can't be. That they're not related.
Colin Kaepernick, his message, it was a pure one. His motivations have proven to be pure.
For sure.
But his message was hijacked. It was. And that's why it became politicized. And that's why Kaepernick became one of the most hated people, most polarizing people in America. Why I was told by executives at multiple different radio stations, hey, don't talk about him. Just don't talk about Kaepernick. It got that polarizing when really he's just pushing the cause of Black Lives Matter, and hey, this is an issue. It became massive because of how messages can be hijacked. I'm not gonna we're very ill-equipped to do this kind of show. I have no clue really what to say. I'm a pasty white guy. We have a segment with B-Dot every single week where I admit how little I know about urban vernacular, how disconnected I can be at points. I recognize that. But I think it's a good thing not to know what to say at points. I'm not the type of person, I never will be, who just says something only to find out he has nothing to say. That's not who I am. I'm just going to listen. I'm going to listen and then try to learn as a result. Listen to people that have different experiences than I do. A guy like Lavelle Moten, who at North Carolina Central has always been unafraid to speak out on subjects. And he told a story this weekend that I think has moved a lot of people about some of the lengths he's gone to try and protect players that he was privileged enough to work with in Durham over the last decade or two. This was that story he told.
See, in our program, we have days where we go in the gym and we put four chairs together as if they're going to be a drivers, a passengers, and two back seats, and we play let's get pulled by the cops today. And this is how you react when the cop pull you, because your job is as a young man is to make it back home, right? So I don't need you being tough. I don't need you mouthing off. I want you to put your license when you go out. I want you to have your license on the dash where you're not reaching into no consoles or glove compartments, because we don't need any built-in excuses for these cops to have a reason to shoot or antagonize you. So when they approach, you keep two hands on the wheel. If you're going to reach for something, you ask him two times, sir, may I please reach for my license right now? And I don't even want you reaching for your license or anything. I want you keeping it on the dashboard. Matter of fact, do what my mentors told me when I was young. Memorize your driver's license number so you can tell them that.
Lavelle Moten, a lot to say. He's someone you can learn a lot from.
But before we break, I know it's hard to find something to say, but I have something to say. And to the black community, I care about you. You matter to me. You right. matter to the show. This stuff does not fall on deaf ears. And right. we hear you. Me and Josh both hear you. And I have your back. Josh has your back.
I think this is a radio show for everybody. The reason why we can't just do a show all about sports today is because if we do so, we are not doing our responsibility to a large segment of our community, to our audience. And that is something I absolutely can't stand for. I just can't. And I won't. And if it means I get more angry emails, so what? I could deal with that. Yesterday afternoon, Steve Forbes, he landed an impact player in the transfer portal. I'll assess Forbes' first month on the job at Wake. Next on The Drive.
No mercy, no pity, no fear.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
After failing to land that coveted point guard from Georgetown last week, Steve Forbes did land a commitment from one of his East Tennessee State guards, Davion Williamson, who is a Winston-Salem native. Davion's going to be a guest on today's show. And unless something crazy happens with one of Forbes' last three scholarships, I think the fair way to assess what Forbes has accomplished in his first month on the job is that he's done exactly what he was expected to do. Nothing more, nothing less. I think he's done a really good job. When you look at the Olivier Saar situation, I think it was a really tough sell. It would have been very difficult to bring him back for the same reason it would have been tough to bring Chandy back. Chandy, he wanted to be a part of the NCAA tournament. That was obvious last week when he was interviewed by Brendan Quinn of The Athletic. He just noted, I don't see us winning next year at Wake Forest, so I wanted to go to a place I could be a part of the tournament. And who can really blame him for that? His first 3 years, no NCAA tournament appearances, and really they didn't even get close any of those years. Olivier, same boat. 1 year left, go to a place where you can participate in the tournament, where you will have peak exposure. He goes to become a Kentucky Wildcat. The other players he's brought back, Jacoby Neath, Odi Aguama, Ishmael Massoud, none of those three guys were going to upgrade from their situations at Wake Forest. So those are guys I expected Forbes to bring back, and good for him, he did it. Like, Neath, he came on towards the end of last year. Four double-digit games, scoring-wise, in the last six. I don't think there's a place in America that's as good as the starting position he would have returning to the Demon Deacons next year. Like, there's not another ACC team or even another Power 6 school I could see bringing in Neath to be their starting point guard next year. Oh, and on top of that, you would have to sit out a year too. So, I didn't really see a situation for Jacoby to go somewhere else and it's worth sitting out a year when you could play for a coach who's going to be motivated to impress right out of the gate, who's going to push you, seems to be a really interesting guy who has coached NBA talent, and you get to start at point guard in the ACC. That's a good spot to be in. Odi Aguama, you get to be the go-to post option. Ishmael Massoud, if you watch the way East Tennessee State plays, there's going to be a spot for Massoud. Probably going to be a spot shooting three, small forward, or somebody as a six man coming off the bench at shooting guard. None of those three guys were going to upgrade in the transfer portal going somewhere else. Sar was a tough sell. Davion Williams, it just made too much sense. It made far too much sense for him to go to San Diego State or BYU or to Tulsa. Unless he did not like his upbringing and he wanted to be outside of his hometown, I thought it wasn't a lock to get Williamson, but it just made too much sense. It's a perfect fit. If you're Forbes and you want to find the perfect player to have in your building, somebody who has starting experience, check. Who would have been a starter on an NCAA tournament team, check. Bringing in somebody who understands you, has a connection to what you want to accomplish, the system you want to implement, the culture you want to foster, and has familiarity with the place he's going to be playing, has played in the Joel Coliseum, who grew up in Winston-Salem. Like, what am I missing here? It just made too much sense for Davion not to be a Demon Deacon. So, Steve Forbes, he's done exactly what he's been expected to do. Where he's exceeded my expectation is personality. Putting Wake Forest on the map. When he jabbed Kentucky on this radio show creating national headlines, some viewed Wake Forest as a laughingstock. Not me. I viewed it as Wake Forest becoming relevant again in national conversation. Because there were some who understood it. Yeah, Wake Forest has a great institution. Forbes, he isn't going to back down to Kentucky. Why? Because when he was in the SEC, they won just as much at Tennessee as Kentucky did in those 4 years. 104 wins for the Wildcats to 100 for the Volunteers. One SEC title apiece. When Forbes was an assistant at Wichita State, his Shockers, when they faced Kentucky in the tournament, were higher seeded. So why would Forbes be afraid of Kentucky now that he's in the ACC? Of course, you have respect for what that program did, but that doesn't mean you're going to back down. Forbes was every bit the part in the mix for Mac McClung. Even though he didn't get him, he wasn't afraid to go head-to-head with Texas Tech, go head-to-head with his former coach, Bruce Pearl. He did not back down, and he's trying to land a five-star and a four-star that he was interviewing towards the end of last week or meeting with on Zoom at the end of last week. So I'm going to keep a close eye on what he does with these final three scholarships. There was a kid at Florida, Florida point guard, who entered the transfer portal yesterday. Maybe that's a guy that you go after as well. I'm fascinated to see how this roster rounds into shape under Forbes. But to this point, it's everything he was supposed to do, where he's exceeded my expectations. Personality, making Wake Forest matter to more people locally, firing up the fan base, getting Wake Forest in the headlines. Hayes Permore, he's going to join us in 10 minutes. And this is something I'm interested in discussing with you, Robert, because Hayes, he is just a character. One of my favorite people on the planet from Sports Channel 8. Loves this state and every single corner of it. He got married over the weekend. And I knew he was engaged. Me, Hayes, and Mary Aiken, his now wife. We went to the Billy Joel concert about a year and a half ago in Winston. It was a lot of fun. But Hayes, he sends the wedding invitation Friday. Friday at 1 o'clock. In my email inbox, I get a wedding invitation.
A little late.
The context, the subject line was this. You are invited to our wedding. It's tomorrow. Please consider not coming. It's so Hayes. Like, he has bullet points. Is this actually your wedding invitation? Yes and no. Are you actually getting married? Yes. So this is a wedding. Yes and no. But this wasn't your original plan, right? Yes and no. Am I invited? Some immediate in-town family will be close by. Other in-town friends. They're going to meet us here at Dick's Park in Raleigh. There's going to be food and drinks. Bullet point six. I'm still kind of confused. Am I invited? To be clear, we're not asking folks to come. Quite the opposite. But if you can, number seven, what's the weather going to be like? Questionable to bad, of course. Is there a rain plan? We've learned better than to make any plans at this point. You can watch online. Like, will there be a makeup wedding party later? Go back to answer number eight, where they're talking about it's best not to make plans. Are you registered anywhere? No. But do you want presents? No. It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's very Hayes.
Then I see the video and pictures on Saturday.
So you did not attend?
I did not, because I didn't know if he wanted me to attend or not. This is a question. This is actually maybe the first question I want to ask Hayes. Did he expect me to attend? Like, I'm one of the few people he's emailed here. Did he expect me? When he says in town, does that really reach to the triad? I don't know. Like, am I bad for not attending this wedding? I'm going to be full disclosure guy here. I needed to get away from all the headlines on Saturday. So I went to Incendiary Brewing and people were spaced out. It was nice. It was good to finally sit down at a brewery for the first time in a long time. So I was just chilling out. And then I look on my phone and I see Hayes wearing like the AC/DC LeBron in the finals look, where he has the suit top and he has like these suit shorts.
Yeah, the slack shorts.
Shorts, like to his knees shorts. And he wore a purple pair of Jordans.
If he is nothing else, he is himself.
And not only did this happen in the middle of a pandemic in downtown Raleigh, it happened during a protest. I don't know how close the protest was to this. I don't know. Hayes isn't on a honeymoon right now. I know that because the next morning, he was a part of picking up the aftermath of the protests in downtown Raleigh Sunday morning. That's a way to celebrate your wedding, right? Next day, let's just go pick up the city that we know and love. Hayes is an all-around good dude, and he loves this state more than anybody I know. And since he got married this weekend, I just got a ton of questions, and he's going to join us next on The Drive.
Turn it up! They came to see us! Let's go!
Back to The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Our good friend Hayes Permore now with us. He's on Twitter at DHPIV from Sports Channel 8. And before we explore Hayes getting married this weekend and trying to figure out just how good or bad of a friend I actually am, Hayes, he loves the state of North Carolina more than anybody I know and has spent time, it seems like, in every corner of the state, whether it be here in the Triad, his home of the Triangle, Eastern North Carolina when I was out that way. So I'm just looking for optimism at this point, Hayes, in a time where there isn't much of it on social media. Was there anything you saw in Raleigh, in Charlotte, in Greensboro, in Winston, that makes you hopeful?
Yes, and thanks for having me, Josh Graham. I think there's reason to be hopeful. Sadly, I think progress in a lot of areas where the cities you mentioned, our state as a whole, our nation, obviously we lag behind, sorely so. There's places where we need progress and action. But sadly, some of these big movements, even the ones that seem the simplest of like treating all people equally, take some of the longest time to actually accomplish. But I do think generationally we have seen some movement. So for that, I'm hopeful. Now, if you ask me if I'm hopeful, if we'll get to the point we need to be in my lifetime, I have a little less hope. But you asked me to be hopeful. And so I'll say, yeah, it may be. Hopefully it's our grandkids. Hopefully we'll see people. Hopefully I'll see people on this earth who will see a time on this earth and in this country when everyone is treated equally. So that I can still be hopeful for, Josh Graham.
On Twitter, at DHPIV, follow his stuff at Sports Channel 8. I got an email Friday at 1 o'clock. I'm preparing for the show. It says, you are invited to our wedding. It's tomorrow. Please consider not coming. And then you have like a dozen confusing bullet points that really don't answer any of the questions that I actually have about this event. You get married on Saturday. I just want to know, in all honesty, Hayes, did you think when I was added to this email list, did you expect that I would be there? Did you think I would be there?
No, because it was very, I don't know what questions you would have had about the wedding, Josh Graham, but I don't know if you're pulling if you're going to put this in the Seinfeld category of the invitation or the non-vite, if you will, where Elaine is famously invited to a wedding in India, but with no time to make plans. If you recall, before we had protests of racial injustice leading to violent riots across the state, well, we were all dealing with the pandemic.
And we still are.
First thing. Yeah, no, exactly. I should not act like we are done with that. That was the first thing that became a roadblock, if you will, for our wedding. And so a big part of when and how we sent out the invitation was to try to make sure, I think right now, we're trying to limit the time that we are traveling in other communities, or if we are in other communities, staying outdoors, not being in other people's homes and stores or whatever. So I did not expect you to come because I was specifically requesting the safest wedding possible, which provided a stream. I did expect that you might watch it on the stream, although a swinging cat like you probably had more going on a Saturday night than a YouTube streamed wedding. Uh-huh. But no, I did not expect you to come because we were keeping it safe. Really, nobody outside of a small group of family and some friends who were in Raleigh were able to come. And some of our best friends were out of town. Even some of our closest family were out of town, and it just didn't make the most sense for them to come. And so you can put yourself somewhere in that category of somewhere between our closest friends who happen to live out of town and people that we knew we could just kick the email to and still get credit for inviting them to our wedding, even though we never would have actually invited them to our wedding. So you're somewhere in there on the spectrum, Josh Graham, okay?
Okay, let's I'll request shorter answers here because I have a lot of things to get to. What was the strangest part of Saturday, getting married during a pandemic, but also having this in Raleigh right around the time a protest was going on?
That was the strangest part, because I think, we were obviously in the moment. It turned out to be beautiful for us. We love Dix Park. If people have had the chance to visit there or will in the future in downtown Raleigh, we live near there. For us, even as with its many imperfections based on circumstance. And obviously, so we were in the moment, and then folks around us were as in the moment as one could expect. But also, as you could expect with everything going on, people were checking their phone and looking for updates. So to be standing at your wedding, finishing up pictures, and hearing people say things like, oh man, sounds like the CVS is on fire, or sounds like tear gas is being brought out. And you're like, what? Not only because it's your wedding day, but because it's something that you haven't seen in the city that I've lived in for, you know, 40 years, nothing quite like it. So it was an interesting time. That was probably the strangest part, hearing sort of stuff as it transitioned from a strong, good, peaceful, needed message into the confusing violence that we've seen happen later at night.
When did you know you were going to wear the outfit you ended up going with, which was a suit, jacket, shirt, and then you have the suit shorts, kind of like what AC/DC would rock, or maybe LeBron in the finals a few years ago when he had that purse bag before and after game one. When did you know you were going to go with that look with the purple J's as well?
Well, with all due respect to AC/DC, I would have to give credit to LeBron for bringing the suit shorts. Josh Graham, as you know, I am no sheep. I do not follow anyone with fashion, and the blazer short combo has been mine for a long time.
Whoa.
Now, I'm not sure if I quite would have flipped into doing it for suit mode had it not happened where somebody posted a picture of LeBron doing it not long after I got engaged. I said something about how I like the style, and somebody said, if you're really about that life, you'll do it for your wedding. And I said, you know what? That makes a lot of sense to get married in an outfit that sort of fits what I would do. Now, to be fair, I had a pair of pants cut from the same suit. I have a great tailor in downtown Raleigh, my man Brian at Glenwood South Tailor and Alterations. He can hook anyone up nice. Worth a drive from the Triad if folks need a great tailor. But he did me up right, did the suit, did everything I needed, and then I said, also, can you throw a pair of shorts in there? And they were perfect. So I encourage anyone. My style wouldn't be someone else's style, but I 100% encourage you to dress to the style that best fits you for your wedding. I think my bride would say the same thing. I think she got a dress that was perfect for her. So do not conform to what you think society thinks you should wear, the regular old tux. If you can afford to, don't rent. And even if you get something cheap at a thrift store, a lot of my outfits from a thrift store. There were times in my life I would not have been able to afford this suit. I would have found something at a thrift store that felt like me. Get married in something that's true to you, whatever that might be. That might be a very nice tuxedo, but get married in something that feels like you for your wedding.
Without getting into the nitty and gritty details, how did wedding night go with Mary Aiken? Because the next morning, I only asked that because the next morning I saw that you were helping pick up the city of Raleigh after the protest.
All right, this just got a little too weird, Josh Graham.
I'm asking how much are you guys paying attention to each other versus the headlines? Because at 9 a.m., you're picking up the city, Hayes.
Are you trying to backdoor asking about PG-13 to R-rated activity?
That's right.
A birds and bees discussion here, Robert?
That's right.
He's off the hook, man.
That's right.
No, we did happen to actually, we had booked a little place to stay just to feel a little bit special, obviously different from a wedding or reception or exit or honeymoon that we would have had. My wife had a great idea to book a place in downtown Raleigh just to stay to be a little bit special. But then that obviously made it a little weird and surreal sort of going downtown in those moments. I would not say I was tear gassed. However, I would definitely say I sort of smelled and felt my eyes the effect of tear gas. And so overall, a surreal moment. I do think that, if you've seen West Side Story or read Romeo and Juliet, that sort of, a strong love can actually distract from a whole lot of other things going on. So I do think we're still each other's primary focus. But it definitely made a surreal backdrop what was going on in the world and close at home to us then.
It's not a Hayes Permar segment unless West Side Story finds a way to get included in it. Hayes, I wish I could have been there on Saturday, buddy. Thanks for doing this show. And also, thanks for the invitation as well. Congratulations, my friend.
Thanks, Josh. And if I may, real quick, you may have a hard break. But I know you have your man B-Dot on the show a lot. I know you used to talk to Chris Lee before he moved from Triad to the Triangle. I applaud you for continuing to have these folks on. And I think the best thing that the guys like you and I can do is to listen a lot in these circumstances, read a lot in these circumstances. So I applaud you and continue to encourage you to have guys like B-Dot on. You know, it can be awkward. We don't ask black people to be spokesmen for their race in times like this. Yeah. But there are folks like B-Dot who are comfortable discussing these issues. And I encourage you to sort of, as you have and always do, sort of lean towards the wisest people in these types of situations. So kudos to you for doing that even before these types of situations are on us, but continuing to do so as we just try and listen and learn and get a little bit smarter. And that, I mean, that's kind of what we try and do as people in all walks of life, right? Learn and get a little bit better.
That's very well said, Hayes. Thank you for saying that.
Appreciate it, Josh Grant. Thanks for having me.
You got it. He's on Twitter at DHPIV. And Robert understands this. I think most people on this show, I'd hope understand this. I don't even know if it's something that needs to be spoken. But I think I want, as long as I'm doing this show and I'm sitting in this chair and I have the opportunity to choose which perspectives and which people are a part of something I attach my name to, I always want it to be diverse. Whether it's, Aaron, who's been such a big part of this show, whether it's B-Dot, as Hayes mentioned, Chris Lee, and it's not even just people of color, but also women as well. Take a hard look at the radio shows that you might listen to, specifically in sports, and look at how many people of color do they have on if it's a white host you're talking about. How many women do they have on? I try as hard as I can to have as many different perspectives make their way onto this show as possible. It's all very intentional. So while I didn't expect Hayes to say that, and it's very kind of him to do so, that is something that really matters to me. And it always has. Dabo Swinney, he's speaking to the media right now. There are some things to share with you from what he has to say. There are a lot of comments, a lot of statements, not just from Dabo, but other coaches and important figures that you know and love, or maybe even hate, that are worth discussing. I'll tell you what I most value next on The Drive.
This is just crazy talk.
So just listen. You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
One of my big sports takeaways from this awful, violent weekend is that athletes are far more comfortable speaking out about issues of race relations than they've ever been before. Actually, let me amend that. NFL players, NFL coaches, NFL owners are more comfortable. The NBA, they've been in these positions where star athletes feel comfortable to speak out for a long time now, but we really haven't seen that with our country's most popular sport. Colin Kaepernick, I think, is most responsible for that. I believe Colin is the reason the NFL feels obligated to put out a word salad nonsense statement yesterday and attach Roger Goodell's name to it. I see the Players Coalition tweeting this out an hour ago. Police chiefs, prosecutors, mayors, and the highest court in the land, we need accountability. And Tom Brady is quote tweeting it with prayer emojis. I don't ever remember Tom Brady talking about anything remotely political. However, in recent months, when Ahmaud Arbery gets killed in Georgia by people I think were pretending to be police officers, trying to play police, it seemed like. What didn't get talked about enough, I think, is that Brady actually signed his name on along with other NFL players who were demanding accountability and change happen. I was flummoxed. Why weren't people, or I guess sports media, that would generally cover everything Brady does, every movement Brady has, they would cover it. There would be stories everywhere. There certainly were when Tom Brady wore a Make America Great Again hat because he was friends for a long time with President Trump. Right? People wanted to talk about that, and there were stories everywhere. But when Tom says that he's going to speak or be willing to sign his name next to with other NFL players looking for change and justice for Ahmaud Arbery, no stories there? It almost seemed like in the media, there were outlets that just didn't want to touch the issue. Basketball and football players desperately want to discuss race relations now. You got to consider football locker room, 70% black, NBA, 75%. Meanwhile, the leadership structure of the NFL, it's always been white. The NFL's always lean conservative as a result on issues such as this. No black owners, 4 coaches of color, 2 general managers. That made race relations between black people and police easier to dismiss. There's no question about it. It made it easier to disassociate from Colin Kaepernick like all these owners decided to do years ago because it wasn't an experience they could relate to. Colin forced these conversations to happen. He made people uncomfortable. He's the reason why, singularly, the Players Coalition I just referenced exists. There was no dismissing it. It's funny, actually. The blackballing of Colin, getting him out of the sport, which it was clear most of the owners wanted, or else they don't just settle with Eric Reid and Colin Kaepernick like they did a few years ago. It actually strengthened his message more than if he played in the NFL again and didn't reach the astronomic heights that exist for somebody of his stature playing that position. Like, there was no chance Colin could achieve the expectations that some placed on him. Achieve or live up to the hype that his celebrity had become because of his activism. So him not being in the NFL, actually, while it wasn't good for his professional career, it was the best thing that could happen for his activism, for his cause, for his movement. He was seen as a martyr. And now, what's happened in the past week, he was justified in the most tragically poetic way possible with a white man's knee placed on a black man's neck. His cause has been legitimized. Now everybody's comfortable speaking. Like, I don't remember a time where NFL players, the stars, were interested in mixing it up on issues of race relations. I never remembered that. But now that Kaepernick, you know the old expression, the first one to go through the glass is going to end up bloodied, it seems like he has opened a path with the recognition many people in this country gave Colin, the affirmation, Nike signing with him, the settlement that Colin had or received, and now all these statements. Because Colin took that plunge, now all these players feel like they can express how they feel. And most of them agreed with Kaepernick. I know that because when I'm in the locker room and I'm talking to these guys, they're all comfortable speaking about Cap. And they all seem to have the same exact opinion. It's all about perspective. It's about listening. But I think it's hard not to go back to Kaepernick when you look at the way players in the NFL specifically can speak so comfortably about a topic that's been almost taboo, uncomfortable to speak on for decades. You can tweet the show at SportsUpDry at 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Trying to look at things that are going on in the state of North Carolina. Davian Williamson's going to join us in less than 10 minutes. Trying to keep tabs on what's happening with Major League Baseball in hopes that there's going to be a season. Major League Baseball, Jeff Passan just putting this out in the last 10 minutes. MLB intends to propose a shorter season in which they would pay players a full prorated share of their salaries. Remember, the Players Association proposed 114 games because players want to make more and have that season go through October. I didn't see any way the owners would accept that. So this potential season that Jeff Passan's talking about says it would run somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 regular season games. The exact number is being considered. The aim would be for a July return. It would be less than the players' proposed season length. So there's just going to be negotiation, and we're probably going to end up at the place that was first suggested, somewhere in the middle between 114 and 50, which is going to be around 82 games, which is what the owners proposed initially. Speaking of baseball, we need to see what our beloved NC Dinos have been doing. This is to appease the stick the sports crowd, Robert. We need to appease those people because I'm getting a lot of it. Hashtag stick the sports, right? So the Dinos, that's our squad in the KBO. Let's see how they did this weekend in Dinos Daily.
Well, Josh, it wasn't great. The Dinos are about to go extinct. My fandom is about to go extinct.
Oh, come on. They just had a rough weekend.
They did have a rough weekend. But you know what? I am a fair-weather Dino fan, and I will wave that flag.
See, forever. I don't even think you're a Dinos fan.
Probably
not. You're going to have to update what happens, win or loss, for them. So I don't think you have a choice whether to follow them or not.
Okay, you're right. So it started off very rough on Saturday, and I was kind of ticked off when I saw this. The Dinos scored one run the entire game. Samsung, who is 10-13, not even in the same league as the Dinos, outscore them 9-1. My man Mike Wright did not have a great game.
No, how'd he do?
Gave up 7 hits.
How many innings?
6 innings.
Oof.
And Parkman Woo, 2 at-bats, no stats. That's not what I like to see.
The Samsung Lions, man. Can't stand them. They're like a thorn in our side.
But you know what? The Dinos bounced back.
Really?
They bounced back in a supreme way. Scoring 18 runs, Josh. 18 runs. They beat the Samsung Lions 18-7, scoring 6 runs in the top of the ninth to just put a nice little bow on top. Our man Parkman Woo was back. He had 1 run, 2 hits, 2 RBIs. No Mike Ryan, but Kuchang Mo, 6 innings, gave up 1 hit and 6 strikeouts. I will take all of that. So the Dinos
split games and you're upset?
I'm upset about losing 9-1 to the freaking Lions.
That's baseball.
It does not happen.
First time they lost back-to-back games this year, Friday and Saturday.
You were talking about baseball going to 50 games. If they could make every game matter, I would watch and I would care.
The Dinos are still 2 games better than the second best team.
I think they're every game better than the second best team. They shouldn't lose a single game,
18-5 on the year versus the second place LG Twins that are 16-7 on the season. Okay. Davian Williamson, he announced his transfer to Wake Forest yesterday. Came from East Tennessee State. The Winston-Salem native will join our show next on The Drive.
Real talky, but not real listening.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
I thought it was fantastic news for Wake Forest yesterday when I learned Davian Williamson is going to be returning home. The East Tennessee State guard, or I guess I should say former East Tennessee State guard, announced his top 5 a short while ago, and then this weekend announced he was going to be a Demon Deacon. And now Davian Williamson's kind enough to spend some time with us here at Sports Hub Triumph. Once upon a time, he played for Winston-Salem Prep, Davian. But here's what I got to know. What is the restaurant or local spot that you had to make sure you visited every single time you returned home when you weren't calling Winston-Salem home? You were in Johnson City, you come back home, you need to see what place, what spot?
It actually wasn't a restaurant. It was my grandma's house. I have to go get my grandma's cook as soon as I came home every time. I couldn't miss out on that anymore.
All right, what's grandma cooking?
She cook a little bit of anything I ask her. You know what I'm saying? She can get it done. But my specialty, my favorite, is spaghetti. I love her spaghetti.
Grandma's spaghetti is legit. Okay, that's something I got to make sure I write down here, make sure we're learning about Davian Williamson. When you're trying to pick between the schools that want you to transfer, what played a bigger role in your decision? Your familiarity with Winston-Salem or the familiarity you have with the coach you're going to be playing for?
Definitely my connection with the coaches was a lot more important. Staying at home, I mean, that's important, but not really, because like at East Tennessee State, my family was still able to make it to some games because it's really not that far. It's about a three-hour drive. So really my connection with the coaches was very important.
How would you just?
I know what to expect from them when I get on campus. So, I mean, that's good.
So describe that part to me. We hear Steve Forbes talking about what he wants to implement, what he wants this program at Wake Forest to look like. You had a chance to see what it looks like in Johnson City. So when you say you know what to expect under Coach Forbes, what exactly is that?
One thing about Coach Forbes, he demands the best out of his players. He gets the best out of his players. You know what I'm saying? He's going to push you to new heights, new levels that sometimes you might not be able to tap into. So, I mean, we're going to be tough on both ends, especially on defense. He preaches defense. He coaches defense, you know what I'm saying? So we're going to be a good defending team for sure. I think that's going to turn around. We're going to be able to score the ball good as well. And most importantly, like I said earlier, we're going to be tough.
What do you remember your first impression of Coach Forbes being when he recruited you out of Winston-Salem, Brett?
I could tell he was a very passionate guy, very enthusiastic guy, you know what I'm saying, guy. But one thing about him I did notice, like, right off the bat, it was, like, he's a real genuine dude. Like, he's a good dude. Like, he cares about you, like, as a man, like, outside of just being a basketball player. So I think that was very important. And I caught that vibe from him from the jump.
When you're talking about enthusiasm, I hear the laugh there as well, Davian. What he's a funny guy too. Like, I mean, we've learned this. The personality comes out. Do you have a good story or something that sticks out to, that speaks to the type of personality this man has?
Nah, it's actually, I don't really have any story. Like, if you guys had a conversation with Coach Forbes, he would have you laughing. He would have you laughing on the radio right now, I'm telling you, if he was on here with us.
Oh yeah, we know.
His personality is great, man. He's a great dude. He's real funny.
All right, let's talk about your background a little bit. It's Davian Williamson here. It is Wake Forest's new guard, transfers from East Tennessee State to the Demon Deacons. Did you grow up going to games at the Joel?
Actually, I've been to plenty of Wake Forest games in the Coliseum. I'm going to a game, I think it was probably my junior year of high school. They played UNC at home. UNC was a top five team in the country. They had Joel Berry. They had Joe Berry at point guard. They were a very good team.
Yeah.
We were going to that game. And I think that was the last Wake Forest game I've been to. But growing up, I've been to plenty of them.
Yeah.
So it's like a dream come true to being able to put on that jersey.
I
play the ACC.
I got to know this, though. I see in these pictures that are on social media, Davian, you're wearing the number 5. There was a really good Wake Forest player that wore number 5 15 years ago. You think Josh Howard, I mean, he's a triad guy. You think he's going to be cool with you wearing number 5?
No, I don't think so. I think I had to pick somewhere else, but it's cool. I respect it, but I'm pretty sure I had to choose something else.
What do you make of the reaction you've gotten? So yesterday, you announced your decision. You're transferring to your home city. You're playing in the ACC. You're playing for Wake Forest. What exactly stood out to you about the responses you then got on social?
The love I received from Wake Forest fans and Deacon Nation was wonderful. I had so much support from Deacon fans and also from the city. That meant a lot. A lot of people in Winston was very excited to see that I was coming to Wake Forest. I see a lot of people saying they're going to get season passes and tickets, and they're coming to all the home games and things like that. So that felt really good that I feel like I can make a little bit of a difference in Wake Forest games and in the community as well.
Can I tell you something that bothers me, Davian Williamson? Davian's with us
yes,
here
sir,
at Sports Outrod. Okay, so
B-Dot is a massive Tar Heel fan. He comes in studio with us once a week. He calls himself the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball. We actually gave that label to him. But then he comes in here and he wears Wake Forest gear. He says he gave Brandon Childress the keys he needed in order to beat Duke this past year. And then B-Chill comes on here and he lies to the audience saying that, oh yeah, it actually was B-Dot who gave me the right tools in order to beat Duke. I'm getting a message from B-Dot here on social who says, yo, Josh, tell Davian I told his ass to go to Wake Forest. Did B-Dot play a role in this at all?
I seen his comment under my post. He played a little role, you know what I'm saying? I'll give him that. He played a little role.
Oh, don't
role.
Lie!
He had something to do with it.
I mean, you're blowing up his head, Davian. I mean, come on.
That's my guy, though. That's my guy. He played a little role in it. I seen his comment when I posted my top five.
All right. Fair enough. I mean, B-Dot, he helped Wake Forest, and I think that's a good thing, and we look forward to getting to know you. I'm just so happy you're going to be able to enjoy a lot more of your grandma's spaghetti dinners, and we get to see
hey,
you do your thing
you
on
too.
The floor. Hey, thanks for spending time with us, Davian. It's appreciated.
Hey, no doubt. I appreciate you guys having me.
You got it. That's Davian Williamson. Wake Forest newest guard. He's on Twitter at DavianWill22. On Twitter, gosh, I'm just fired up at B-Dot. Talk about having your cake and eating it too, Robert. B-Dot, big Tar Heel fan.
This
and
guy.
Now he's taking up, he's eating Wake Forest cake too?
He's a chameleon, dude. He blends
ridiculous.
In. He like all of a sudden he's Wake.
Do you got B-Dot's number? Call him.
I do have B-Dot's number.
I know he's listening right now. I want to speak to B-Dot. We're going to have him in studio on Wednesday. If he's not doing anything, I want to get this guy on the phone right now. And just annoying more than anything else. B-Dot taking credit for things he doesn't deserve. And he's all over Twitter. Just ridiculous. B-Dot.
What?
I mean, you heard Davian. Were you working behind the scenes to make this happen?
Listen, man, Davian, D-Dub is my homie, man. That's like my little bro. You know I'm tied into this scene with on the basketball scene. You know that, Josh. And D-Dub is a good friend of mine. He's like a little bro. And when I saw who Wake Forest chose as their head coach, I immediately hit him up like, are you going to be moving? He didn't give me any. He didn't say nothing. He didn't respond back. So I just let it go. Then when he put Wake Forest in his top five, I put in his comments. I was like, I already know what you're going to do. You're coming to Wake. And he never responded. But then when he made his announcement, you know, we just had a little mop up in the DMs. But that's the homie, man. D is the homie. And I think he's going to play great over there at Wake Forest. Absolutely.
So when did B-Dot know that Davian was going to choose Wake Forest?
Oh, the moment that a new head coach was
was
at Wake Forest, absolutely.
So you didn't think he was going to go to Tulsa?
No, hell no. No, absolutely not. I knew he was going to follow his coach, man. Like, you know, I actually got a chance to coach him in the Josh Level Classic. Josh Level Classic is an event they have in Greensboro every year. They didn't have it this year due to the COVID-19. But some of the best players in the country play in this this basketball game because Josh Level was a Greensboro native. He was a prospect and he was awesome. So he had a relationship with all these great athletes. So a lot of athletes come back home and play. And you know, it's one of those things. Actually, on my team, Davian was on my team. Kobe White was on my team. Like I had a pretty stacked team. We actually won. Kobe White dropped like 45 points, the most ever in the Josh Level Classic. But I saw Davian then. I was like, and I just became a fan of him then. And this had to be maybe 3 years ago. And I've just been watching him. And of course, because Wes Miller's my guy over at UNCG, I get a chance to see a lot of the SoCon games. And I got to see Davian play a lot. So I mean, you know, it's just that I'm not as close to him as I am with Brandon, but he is the little bro. And Brandon did not come on the air and lie. Brandon told you the truth, and I will tell you again. I could have amnesia, and I will be able to tell you this. We went to dinner before the Duke game, and I told him the keys to beating Duke. And then he beat Duke.
Yeah, what was he doing? Here's my theory. He was listening to what you were saying for the first 29 or first 38 minutes of that game in which he didn't score a field goal. And then he started finally listening to Coach.
Yes, well, sort of. It wasn't really like that. Like, the game was just all over the place, as you saw. But the things that I told him were people on his team that I thought would be super beneficial in order for them to beat Duke. And earlier in the game, he was getting those guys involved, the Sean D's and the Olivier's and things of that nature. So when it was time for him to add his sauce, that's what I was upset about. It went the entire first, 29, 30 minutes of the game, yeah. And he was doing absolutely nothing. And I'm like, Brandon, telling him to telepathically, like, listen, you have to do your part too. Like, not just get the other guys involved. You got to give me some buckets. And then when he started turning on the buckets, you see what happened, Josh.
Yeah. B-Dot's with us here, and I'm looking forward to having you in here on Wednesday. And I know on your social media what you've been doing. You've been striking a lot of the right chords. And, I mean, I was talking to Robert today. I just feel very ill-equipped to do the show that's necessary for today because I, quite frankly, in regards to everything that's happening over the weekend, I have no clue what to say. And so I rely on guys like you, and I rely on guys like Chris Lee, and I rely on guys who are friends, people to come in here because I think a radio show like this only works if you have several different perspectives, several different voices from backgrounds that are unlike mine. And I think what you've been doing the last few decades, really, in radio, it's been striking chords that, quite frankly, I can't. And I learned a long time ago, don't just say something to learn you have nothing to say. Don't just talk to learn you have nothing to say. So I'm just interested in do you feel optimism? What are you feeling today as you see everything that's happened, not just across the country, but in our state?
Optimism, I guess you can say that, but not 100%, Josh. Like today was actually the first day I actually went back to my own show, 3 Live Crew, this morning because we've been pre-recording the show, but I actually wanted to touch the people. I wanted to be able to take phone calls and hear from the people and let them have their voices heard and things of that nature. So I went back to the studio live today, and my counterparts were still at the house, and we just did the show that way. After that, I actually got a chance to actually drive through the streets of Greensboro, and I went down Elm Street and just seeing everything boarded up and the Black Lives Matter and the BLM hashtags on different spray painted on different buildings. And like that isn't the Greensboro that I'm familiar with, and that saddened me a lot. The history in Greensboro with, February 1 Street and the Civil Rights Museum and the AT4 and things of that nature, like this is a city that is rich in history, especially the advancement of Black people historically. And, you know, just to see that the strangest thing for me is being a parent and my son, who is now 13, when he was 6, we were going through Trayvon Martin. When I was 13, we were going through Rodney King. When my wife's mother was 13, it was Emmett Till. Right? And so to just continuing to have these types of conversations for decades and decades, they're hurtful. It's difficult to try to explain to my 8-year-old that my 8-year-old daughter that all cops aren't bad cops, and she turns on the TV and she sees a cop putting his knee on a man's neck as he screams out for his mother who has been gone 2 years, and this man dies at the hands of a police officer. It's difficult to tell my 13-year-old son, yes, you can walk around this neighborhood when you see Ahmaud Arbery just walking and jogging through a neighborhood and 2 vigilantes jump out and assassinate him in the middle of the street. It's difficult to have these conversations. But I will say today was the first time I actually spoke with an ally, I like to call one of my white friends, who was telling me that it's almost equally, and I don't know equally, I don't want to misspeak for him, but he just said how difficult it was to explain to his daughter how when his 8-year-old daughter asked him, why are Black people mad at white people, and him trying to explain that to her from an ally's perspective. And up until today, very selfishly, I had never thought about that, the conversations that people like you must have with other people regarding, the state of that we're in right now. But do I see optimism? I really, really don't right now, Josh, and it saddens me to say that. But, you know, I'm hopeful that something can come from this. We all know that the best thing that can happen sometimes is just to destroy everything and then rebuild it. So I'm hoping that if nothing else, just the dialogue and the conversation and the uncomfortable conversations that we must have between black people and white people in order to get to a comfort zone will begin to be had, bro.
I'm optimistic for one reason, that it seems the next generation, it always seems the next generation's easy to pile up on and criticize. But when I see 20-year-old Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow taking the lead in ways that active players aren't even going, or NFL players who have been in the league for a long time, they're not even going to those lengths. And coaches, they're taking the lead from their teenager, 20-year-old athlete. It feels like these issues matter more to the next generation, making sure they're doing right in this regard, than generations that have come before them. And in terms of the right way to approach things, and also just the importance of these conversations, when I hear Lavelle Moten at Central talking about taking practice time, not spending on basketball, but simulating having a police stop with four chairs in the middle of the gymnasium and telling his players what exactly they need to do when they interact with a police officer, it's all just foreign to me. The idea of remembering your license number and remembering to place the license on the dash, these are all things that are just unknown to me, but the optimism comes in the next generation. What do you think?
I think that's the privilege that you have. And
absolutely.
And I think that the strength in that is understanding the privilege you have. You know what I'm saying? And realizing that those aren't worries and those aren't concerns of yours. As a matter of fact, right now I'm at my radio station. I have to go in and print out paperwork because here in Greensboro we have a curfew from 8 to 6. I have to be on the air at 6 in the morning, so I'm going to have to be out driving tomorrow at 5:30. My boss and my GM both gave me a phone call, and I had a conference call with them because they were concerned about my safety driving to work during the hours where we're on a curfew. And they're asking me, am I concerned about that, and am I worried about that, and things of that nature. And they got a bit emotional because that isn't something that they have to worry about. But me being a black man driving a Charger, I might need to think about that a time or two. You know, so, and like, these are the things that, again, these are the conversations that we've been having to have with our children. These are the conversations that we're going to have to continue having with our children. I told you, I just gave you the timeline from my mother-in-law to my daughter.
Yeah.
And like, these are the conversations that are going to have to keep happening. I know that another radio personality put out something that I retweet that said, you want to do a silent protest, take all your black athletes out of PWIs and put them in HBCUs. And that struck a lot of conversation. Like, a lot of players who are currently in the ACC have been in my DM saying things like, I'm really contemplating transferring. Other players have told me that they, if they would have been more educated on HBCUs, they possibly would have chosen HBCU. And that's a responsibility on us, those of us who have graduated from HBCUs, to instill those and to instill the importance and the necessity that an HBCU is for our culture into the next generation, so that they can even make that an option. You know what I'm saying? Like, but Brandon Childress hit me up and he said, yo, I want to go on IG Live with you at 8:30 to talk about this whole black kids going to HBCUs and not D1 schools or not PWI schools, and why, you know, why that's impossible. And the word impossible upset me. And I told him I would definitely be there at 8:30. I didn't want any background on what he was about to say. I want to hear it fresh off his lips so that I can give my honest reaction there with no thought behind it. But I'm interested in that conversation because he's someone who has played on the top level. ACC basketball, you know, D1, it doesn't get much higher than that. And for him to say that it would be impossible for black athletes to all leave PWIs and go to HBCUs, I would just like to know his reasoning why behind that.
B-Dot, your perspective is, it means more than you know. I look forward to seeing you on Wednesday as always, and
absolutely
appreciate what you do, buddy.
No doubt, man. Stop telling people that I came on your show lying. I've never, not one time came on that show in cap, Josh. Never, not one.
And I now know what that means, thanks to you.
Bye, man.
Later. He's on Twitter at B-Dot. He'll be in here for an hour on Wednesday. Lord knows what we'll get into. Robert, real quickly, what do we got to take it to the house?
I'm going to talk a little bit about my family.
All right. Robert's going to talk about his family when we take it to the house next.
What the hell is this show? Why does everybody keep talking about it?
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
I'll second the thoughts of Adam Gold earlier today. I don't know if tomorrow's show is going to be sports heavy. It very well might be. The audience and what we see around our communities is going to drive and warrant what exactly we get to on this show. But I'm proud of what we did today. I hope conversation comes out as a result of it. If you missed any of it, subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts. Just search The Drive with Josh Graham. Robert Walsh takes us to the house.
Past the 15, past the 10, past the 5 for The Drive. We'll take it to the house.
1, 2, 3.
I don't have some hokey story or something funny to talk about today. I don't even know really how to talk about this. When I came in today, I was emotionally exhausted. Josh asked what we're going to talk about today, and I didn't know. But if me telling this helps somebody else out, then I hope it does. I was raised in a household that is less than accommodating to other races. And it is necessary for us to not have these conversations within our family. Yeah. I was spending time with my dad this weekend, and the talk of these riots or protests and everything came together, and the N-word came out. And that's not something that's rare. That's something that's actually pretty common. And rather than argue or make a post on Facebook, I just cried. I cried right in front of him. And I told him how uncomfortable that makes me. And I feel like we all have to do that. We have to have these uncomfortable conversations at any cost. Because him seeing me genuinely hurt was the first time that we've made any headway on this conversation. So if you're in a similar predicament that I was, it's hard. But we have to have these conversations, and I hope it gets better. And if I have anything to do with it, it will. So I hear you, protesters, I've got your back, and it does not fall on deaf ears.
I'll leave it there, Robert. Thank you for that. I know that was difficult. I think a lot of people can relate to what you said, and it gives us a lot to think about before we convene again at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday drive.